It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Officials from 18 counties admit to having accepted gifts from vendors as they consider from which company to purchase new voting machines. Auditor General Eugene DePasquale says even if the value of those gifts is below the legal threshold for reporting them, accepting them smacks of impropriety. We'll speak with the Auditor General about that and what to do about school districts in dire financial condition. But first, innovators, disruptors. These days, the work lauded by society is all about creating. But what about jobs that maintain the world we live in? On today's episode of Still Working, our series about work in Western Pennsylvania, we meet three people whose work keeps us humming along. A facilities director at an ice rink, a dentist, and a mechanic.
A bad day is broken glass. When that happens, whenever like there's a hockey game or whatever, broken pane of glass will ruin anyone's day because it's all hands on deck at that point. So everyone, they're dropping what they're doing and changing the glass because life has to go on the ice. So we got to get that changed as fast as possible. My name's Gordon Nolan. I am the head of maintenance at Alpha Ice Complex here in Harmerville, Pittsburgh, PA.
I was running down the street. I had three boxes of pizza in my hands, and my child had her hands in her pockets while running, so she fell flat on her face. And immediately I go down, you know, she's crying a little bit, has a little bit of a bloody nose. And I was like, let me see your teeth. And she opens her mouth and she lets me in there and I feel around, you know, like, it, and she didn't even second guess it or even hesitate. But she knows what I do and that I'm a tooth doctor. My name is Lorraine Callen and I am a dentist at Allegheny General Hospital.
My mom always joked around about saying that. She's like, you're basically a car doctor. And I was like, that would be a really cool, like, a mechanic shop. You'd be like, hey, take your car to the car doctor. My full name is Andrew Michael McCaney, and I'm an automotive technician at Shadyside Honda.
Here's where all the magic happens.
First thing you do is, as soon as you walk into the place, before you even punch in, you look at the ice temp. Like, every hour, we're supposed to check the ice temps. Just to make sure if something were to happen, you're on top of it instead of waiting 6 hours. And then, that's not good in this field because you're going to lose the ice or you're going to have problems the rest of the day.
Andrew service, please. Andrew service.
Work starts at 7:30. I usually like getting up at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock is a good time to get up, and it gives you plenty of time and you're not rushing. And just because we're not from here and like traffic can get crazy at times, especially with the weather conditions, but gotta have coffee, just gets the brain going. So, and then get to work, see if there's any cars that have already been checked in and customers are already waiting, and then just go to my service advisor, see about what kind of work is available.
I'm gonna take a peek around, okay? And when those x-rays come up, we'll take a look at them together. So you're still healing.
Uh-huh.
How long ago was it that you had those out?
It was
a lot of people see their dentist more often than they see their medical doctors. So at every 6 months, we check their blood pressure. We do some, you know, like go over health history, do an oral cancer screening, you know, treating the teeth while they're still in your mouth, how to keep them as long as possible.
The tooth on top, above there,
uh-huh.
At some point we're probably going to lose that.
This one?
Yeah, the one that's not functioning.
Okay.
This one, I'll show you. You know, and it looks fine now. I wouldn't say get rid of it now.
Okay.
But I have no loyalties towards that one at all.
Okay.
Because it's not functioning. So, you know.
The Acura NSX. Two-door sports car. Super fast. Super low to the ground. Yeah, back in the day, that was one of my dream cars. And my favorite color is yellow. And so I always wanted a yellow one. I had a yellow little Honda Civic hatchback. I was a 16 years old, all of our friends were into cars, doing little odds and ends, and then, yeah, we didn't have the coolest cars, but yet we were fixing them up and, like, going everywhere and, like, parking in a line and, like, just hanging out, and like, as we grew up, we got more into it and, like, did performance work, and rather than just, like, it was like a looks thing, like, oh, we're gonna, you know, put rims on it, and I graduated in 06, and I just didn't think that would be a career. Worked, and then just got with my wife at the time, or she was my girlfriend, but my wife now, and she was like, well, I plan on going to college. And so I was like, if you get into the University of Texas and then like we move over there, I definitely would try like a trade school and then just, you know, go from there and start from the bottom and try to work my way up to be a technician.
There's 37 pounds of pressure in there. You want to get it to, I think it's like 33 on the sedans. SUVs are 34, 35.
So there's the blade at the bottom. That's what cuts, actually, why we call it a nice cut.
I was in Votec for diesel technology, and I ended up working for a Caterpillar dealer. I had 2.5 years of training in HVAC, diesel technology, hydraulics, all that stuff. And as soon as I got out of school, the company sold, and I got laid off. I was the first to go, and lo and behold, this just happened to fall in my lap. Came over here and was working in a pro shop, and they just needed a Zamboni driver. Said, would you want to learn how to drive the Zamboni? I said, sure. I mean, who wouldn't? 13 years. I think it's my 14th year now doing this stuff. So it's crazy. Never in my dreams did I think I'd end up here.
So I'm going to call off to Rose all your teeth, all your fillings, everything, and then I'll explain what the heck I'm talking about, okay? Because it'll sound like nonsense. Okay, Rose, she's missing number 2, 13.
I've always wanted to be a dentist. Like, from fifth grade, I have short stories I wrote about flying toothbrushes. Like, I've always just wanted to be a dentist. I don't think I even gave myself the chance to think of other occupations or professions. My dentist was very good friends with my dad in high school. I'm from a very small town. So I think that is where I saw the profession as a child and just was like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. You know, done deal.
Boy, I mean, we're home, I think, to like 8 ice hockey teams, 8 or 9, if not more than that. This whole area is pretty much funnels down into one little place. It's pretty cool. A lot of different people, a lot of the same people. Hockey rink's pretty much, it's like a close-knit community inside it because everyone knows everybody.
There's a lot of things going on in the mouth. I really like the hands-on part of dentistry. I really like working with people. I am in the educational kind of division of dentistry. But I'm not interested in the business end all that much.
Yeah, relatively slow day. Unexpected, but I mean, just the way the field is. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's bad. But for a Monday, it's kind of expected. Beginning of the week, you know, yeah, they thought they would come in. I think about like 5 people didn't show up, so.
We get paid by the job, so. It's just a game, a constant, am I gonna make money off this? You basically have to push yourself to be able to diagnose the car faster.
Right here, they always skate to the bench, kick the snow up, and then jump onto the bench. So you always have this stuff, this snow buildup on the ice right here.
I think good ice is all in the eye of the beholder. Honestly, it seems that hockey players are grateful for ice. They, yeah, would like it smooth and whatnot, but they can deal with a couple ruts. They really could care less, I think. In my experience here, they just want to play and they want ice to skate on. Figure skaters, they need smoother ice. So we kind of have to cut it down more. So if we're like in a figure skating event or whatnot, because they're skating backwards, they're jumping, they're doing stuff that ice hockey players aren't. So they need that kind of peace of mind knowing that if I skate on this, I'm not going to get hurt. Basically what the Zamboni is actually doing is cutting the ice while it's resurfacing. So it lays cold water, cuts the ice, and lays hot water all at the same time. It's It's a very neat tool.
Whole class in about brakes, and then a whole class about AC, a whole class about transmissions and engine repair, fluids and tires and stuff like that. But other than that, everything about the component and how it works, like the whole like engine, like what, how to diagnose it properly and not misdiagnose it, pinpoint what's causing the different components to act up. That was one of the major things back home. If someone was leaving their car there, like they were like, hey, can you go on a test drive real quick just so you can have a idea? You know, no one's perfect, and like how people write up the report for the technician, like a customer hears a squeak. A squeak to somebody could actually be like a knocking noise, or it's like, you know. And so the test drive thing always is super beneficial for sure.
But I feel like people have a harder time with a lot of dentistry because it's in their mouth. And it's like, if it's a person working in your mouth, you can't see what they're doing. You're kind of at their mercy. You have no idea. If it's pain, it's in your head. People just know it's something they have to do, and maybe that's why they dislike the task, you know. And then the patients that it's the patients that have beautiful teeth and don't have anything going on, but they've missed it for a couple years. They're worried sick when they come in to see me. Like they know that something's happening. And when you're like, no, this is totally fine, you see that relief just like hit them, being like, oh my God, thank you so much. I was like, I didn't do anything.
People lack the knowledge, and especially with like the technology too, it's like you really need to know what your car is capable of and when it's time for fluids to be changed, and just the service manual is in every single car. I just don't think anybody reads it.
So I have all my filters for the white machine, the new red machine, the two blue machines are in the back.
Started their preventive maintenance program here. They really didn't have much of like a log or anything. Preventive maintenance program is basically keeping a log, which is what this is here, of all the machines. You're not going to remember everything, so write it down. When was the oil changed? How many hours are on the machine during the change? So you can see how long your parts are lasting, how long the machine's lasting, what it's due for, so you can prevent catastrophic failures. Things break down inevitably, like it just happens.
I'll go ahead and do the battery test right now, and then I can just lift it up and take the tires off. Let me locate the battery tester. You're going to fix a component, and you can't fix it because, like, age or the condition of it, and that's lack of maintenance, too. It's like, so it kind of puts you in a situation where you, like, you're at fault, but then it's just like there was no saving it to begin with, and you just thought you could.
My patients should be receiving their dental care at my dental IQ, how much I understand of it. And if I'm not making them understand, then I'm failing in some way. You know, like, I want to make sure every patient understands why this is going on, what their options are.
This insurance is relatively new, is that right?
Yeah.
So you had a missing tooth clause with it. Had you gotten those teeth taken out before you got this insurance, they wouldn't cover replacements for it.
Now wait, I can get replacement teeth?
Yeah, that's what we're talking
can
about.
Can I get gold ones?
Yeah, for sure.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
are you serious? I can get gold ones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so we'll talk about all the options. That comes in afterwards. We'll talk about what
I don't know. This is, I don't know how to describe it. I guess, like, when people become doctors, or I guess it's in any field where you go and you put so much time into, like, having a career in something. And like with me, I just feel like I've loved working on cars forever, that like I just feel like I'm in my element, because just like the energy it brings, like I'm fixing a car, or I'm helping someone out that really doesn't know how to, you know, fix their car or know what's going on.
Do I get paid enough? I mean, that's the American dream, ain't it? Yeah, I mean, I do. The new owners made it worth my while. They keep you here. You know, they appreciate the knowledge that I have, the experience I have. I'm glad I stayed. I'm glad I'm working here. I'm glad I'm working for this company.
I mean, I have a profession. You know, like I'm a dentist. How many days a week and what capacity? I don't know, but absolutely, I'll be probably doing the exact same thing at the exact same spot. And I enjoy it. I could see growing old with my office mates together.
I was always interested, I should say, in the sport, but never, I don't know. Yeah, I still don't really skate. So after all these years, you would think, but yeah, I'm just working on the machines and everything else. That's like my skeleton in the closet there, yeah.
So oral hygiene-wise, I'm going to say do exactly what you've been doing.
Cool. Okay.
You know, we have to fix that one chip, but you're looking really good, actually.
That's crazy. Yeah. I felt really, you know what I mean? I was embarrassed about it when I went, right. You know? I was like,
but it's not. I always say, don't be embarrassed about it because you're taking care of it.
For
you're
sure.
getting it done, you know? It's all about you being healthy, and you're getting there. And when you have your gold teeth, you're going to be healthy and looking good.
Still Working is produced by Margaret J. Krause and Kevin C. Brown with support from the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation. To hear other stories throughout the month, see photos, and subscribe to the iTunes or Google Play podcast feed, visit wesa.fm/stillworking. Next time, Still Working takes a look at who feeds us and how. I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Katie Blackley with the Pittsburgh Almanac. This week in history, the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra performs for the first time in 1896. Following the construction and dedication of Andrew Carnegie's Music Hall in Oakland, the Art Society of Pittsburgh raised money to create an orchestra in the city. Boston conductor Frederick Archer led the new group, which was originally comprised of 50 musicians. The orchestra performed twice a week for 40 weeks in Pittsburgh during its first year. Now, the PSO's home is Heinz Hall downtown, although they've toured around the world. Last year, they won 2 Grammy Awards for their recording of Dmitri Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony and Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. That's today's Pittsburgh Almanac.
It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. In April, voters in the 37th State Senate District will hold a special election to fill the seat held by Guy Reschenthaler before he was elected to Congress. Republican Dee Raja faces Democrat Pat Iovino in the district, which includes airport area suburbs and the South Hills. Raja sat down with 90.5 WESA's Chris Potter to talk about the race and why he thinks a severance tax on natural gas is a bad idea.
Let's just start with a really obvious question, and it's one I saw asked on one of your campaign ads, which is like you saw those little hands typing out, who is Raja, into the search bar. And I have to tell you, I typed in who is Raja in the search bar, and I didn't get you. I got some guy who was forced to resign as Uttar Pradesh's food and civil supplies minister. But tell us who you are, why you want to run for this office.
Funny story, when I got the Republican nomination, one of the TV channels there said Raja wins the nomination, but it wasn't a photo of me. It was a photo of whoever this guy was. So I got like 4 different calls. So I came here 32 years ago to go to school, Chris. I grew up in India till I was 20, founded a company, a technology company. So since then, we've grown, employee well over 500 in Pittsburgh and across the country. Having come here, having been given the opportunity to succeed, I don't want to sit on the sidelines.
So talk about what that means in terms of the kind of policy vision that you have.
My top priorities is really to create jobs. And I think there's something unique in our region. You know, we're sitting on some of the richest deposits of the natural gas that's out there. But really, it's just not the gas where the potential is. It's the downstream industries that come from the gas, which is the petrochemicals, the pellets, the plastics, the advanced manufacturing.
This segues very naturally into the fact that your campaign just released what I think is the first negative ad about Pam Iovino, and it links her to Nancy Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Talk a little bit about what it is about Pam Iovino that you think sort of justifies linking her with those folks, and what your differences with her are.
I think we both probably agree we're sitting on some of the richest deposits of natural gas in the world. She is in favor of a severance tax. So I think that's sort of what I see is the big difference, me and Ms. Iovino.
That said, I mean, there's a difference between supporting a severance tax, which West Virginia and many of the other states that Pennsylvania competes with have, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whose, you know, Green New Deal seems to be about transcending fossil fuels entirely.
In terms of the Marcellus, I think certainly, you know, Pam and Alexandria would be lockstep with it.
One running dispute here in the region involves gun control. The city of Pittsburgh in particular would really like to do all kinds of regulations of firearms, banning certain types of ammunition and accessories. Should a local municipality have the ability to determine for itself what kinds of rules may apply to gun ownership?
I think not only is the state laws in effect, but federal laws are in effect too. And I think the Mayor Pedrudo is in violation of those by trying to propose his own laws here in this regard.
You've run for this 37th district once before. I think it was 2012.
7 years ago.
You lost that race. And I think the year before you had run against Rich Fitzgerald for county executive. You lost that race as well. Rich Fitzgerald and Matt Smith attacked you. And there were a couple of thrusts to that. One was that you used workers who were still in India, and they were taking away good-paying American jobs. That was the argument at the time. And then also that your firm had filed suit against a number of its own employees. I think it was for leaving the job before finishing their consulting gigs or whatever. I've looked, and I don't see as many of those suits now as there were back in the time there. And I'm curious whether the company's doing anything differently now and what you want people to know about them.
This is a standard practice. What happens is we have people who are placed at our clients. And when these individuals leave with no notice, the client's in a jam. So a lot of times, you know, we enforced, you know, some of the contracts in the past. Again, you're going back like 10, 20 years ago. And again, at the same time, during the dot-com days, there was a shortage of talent here. We just could not, you know, find the right talent in Pittsburgh. So we, at that point, you know, we brought a few people from OER who had the technology. Certainly with our schools here, us graduating, all these great talent, we just hire pretty much locally all the time now.
D. Raja, thank you so much for your time here today, and good luck election April 2nd, if I recall correctly. I'm sure yes. You've got that tattooed on you somewhere.
I can't wait. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
That's Republican State Senate nominee D. Raja speaking with 90.5 WESA's Chris Potter. We've reached out to Democrat Pat Iovino. Look for an interview with her soon. I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Counties across the state are under a mandate to acquire new voting machines that have a paper record of the ballots cast. Officials from 18 counties have admitted to accepting gifts from vendors. Meantime, an audit indicates that Penn Hills School District's financial condition is catastrophic. We're going to talk about these topics with Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale, who wants to be in studio, but his flight was delayed, and he joins us by phone. Welcome to The Confluence.
Yeah, you know, state auditors don't have Air Force One, so it was a little bit of a trick getting down in Pittsburgh in time, so glad we could make this work by phone.
All righty, let's start with counties have been ordered to have the new voting machines in place no later than next year's presidential primary. Sure. Several different machines have been certified by the state. When did you first learn that gifts from voting machine vendors were being accepted by county officials?
Yeah, it was earlier this year. It first developed in Luzerne County, which is in northeastern Pennsylvania, where an elections official was actually on an advisory board for one of the companies. And that led me to say, if somebody's actually on an advisory board for one of the companies, we need to really dig deeper and find out if this is happening across Pennsylvania. And we found out that, unfortunately, it was 18, you know, we have 67 counties, so the majority didn't do this, but 18 counties were part of accepting gifts, you know, trips, wine festivals, dinners, that type of thing, which to me is completely unacceptable, especially when it's such a critical issue, and we really need to make sure that we're getting the best equipment for voters, not who provides the best dinner.
You used the word unacceptable. Is it illegal, unethical?
It is definitely not illegal, and one of the things I've proposed is we should change the law. I do believe it is unethical. I don't believe that when somebody is trying to get county business, or whether it be even state or federal business, that the people that are directly making that decision should be accepting gifts from the people trying to get that business.
Even if the gifts are legal, what message does that send to taxpayers who will be footing the bill for the voting machines?
I find it unacceptable. And I, you know, thankfully where I live, you know, that wasn't one of the counties that did this. But the message should be simple. Make the decision based on who has the best ability for voters to cast safe and secure and reliable votes, not who provides a dinner. You know, and here's another thing. You know, even the vendors that were doing this, they weren't meeting with all the other possible vendors, all the ones that have been certified. It was only, you know, ES&S and Dominion were the ones that were doing all of this, which really, you know, draws a question as to why were those two companies pushing this so hard? If their equipment was so good, why even have to rely on the wine festivals and the amusement park visits?
All right. Is there another step, a next step for you regarding
this?
We are
also auditing right now. I'm also auditing the state's voter registration database to make sure it is secure as possible. I just came back from a meeting with Homeland Security down in Washington, D.C. It is very clear, and Homeland Security and the Trump administration has verified this, that we were one of the 21 states that the Russians tried to hack our voter registration database. They were not successful, but we know that those are going to continue to be attempted, and we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can in Pennsylvania to make sure our system is secure.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. Our guest is Pennsylvania Auditor General Eugene DePasquale. On another topic, there are several financially challenged school districts in western Pennsylvania. One of them is Wilkinsburg. 5 years ago, I believe it was, you conducted an audit of the Wilkinsburg School District. Among other things, you reported the district had a serious deficit, shrinking fund balance, and was placed on the financial watch status. You've now completed a new audit. Has the situation improved?
Yeah, we'll be formally announcing Wilkinsburg later today. I will tell you that, you know, look, Pittsburgh School District stepped in has provided a lot of help to that district. The financial situation is better. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they are in a better place now than they were financially when we did that last audit.
Is it because of the measures they've taken, better tax base? How would you assess why it's better?
Yeah, it's not because the tax base improved. It's really the Pittsburgh Public School District stepping in to help. The state of Pennsylvania, through, I think, the leadership of Jay Costa, had a lot to do with that as well. And they implemented several of the recommendations that I put forward in my last audit. So I think a combination of all three of those helped put them in a better financial place.
Well, you mentioned Pittsburgh Public Schools helping out. Students in grades 7 through 12 now go to Pittsburgh Westinghouse, and Wilkinsburg School District is basically just grades 1 to 6.
Right.
Final question on this. Is Wilkinsburg in serious enough financial trouble that it should dissolve?
It would not shock me if 20 years from now it is no longer in existence as a school district. It's obviously a shrinking population. I think it is an experiment that seems to be working so far with the Pittsburgh School District. I would not be surprised if that trend continues.
Another school district, you're actually holding a community meeting about the Penn Hills School District, which is now, I believe, about $172 million in debt. County grand jury issued a report this month following a 2016 audit by your office. You said at that time, quote, "Everyone seems to have turned a blind eye as the school district marched toward financial disaster," end quote. At that community meeting tomorrow evening, what do you hope to gain from it?
I want to hear from the parents, teachers, students, what they're looking for in the school district and what they're willing to weather as far as changes. That's the school district, with, you know, someone that went to Pittsburgh Central Catholic, and, you know, we had great rivalries with Penn Hills when I was in high school. It is amazing the disastrous financial shape that district is in. I don't know at this point how they dig out of it without state assistance. And I can understand why other state legislators would be frustrated in giving that assistance when, you know, Penn Hills created this financial disaster on their own. But I want to hear directly from parents, teachers, and students of what type of changes they'd like to see at the district, what type of changes they're willing to weather. and basically take that feedback, and I'll take it back to the governor and to members of the General Assembly and also to the Secretary of Education.
You did that audit nearly 3 years ago. Why is it taking so long to deal with the finances, which have been called catastrophic?
It's inexcusable, and it only gets worse. They borrowed, when we came out with that audit, I made it clear they borrowed $130 million and had no plan to pay it back. Here we are 3 years later, and there still is no plan. In fact, the latest tax increase that the school district proposed doesn't even address the debt that they owe. I just continue to say, okay, enough is enough. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to hear from the taxpayers, parents, students, and let the Secretary of Education know, hey, look, if you're expecting the district to take the leadership on this, you're going to be waiting a long time.
What legislative reforms might help? As you said, there might be a reluctance to basically throw more money at the problem from the state side.
I think the state's going to clearly have to take more financial control of the district. I'm not talking about on the curriculum and the extracurricular activities, but clearly I think at this point the state's going to have to take more financial control of the district for starters.
All right. We have just a couple minutes left, Auditor General. Let's talk about a potential revenue generator for the state. Of course, as you know, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman continuing his tour to get citizen input on whether to legalize recreational marijuana. You were the first statewide official to advocate for legalization. Was it just to legalize it, or was your intention to have revenue generated from it?
To me, first of all, if we regulate and tax marijuana, it's just a smarter way to handle a very complicated issue. The idea that we're still throwing people in jail for this is insane, in my opinion. Number two, I think if we regulate it the right way, it's a chance to grow actual private businesses. And done right, it can actually limit access to teens. Third, look, we would generate, if you just look at what other states have done that have already gone down this path, we're 2.5 times the size of the state of Colorado. If we basically had a similar tax structure to them, we would bring in an annual new tax revenue without hurting any other industry of $581 million.
What we've learned, and we have just a couple minutes left, what we've learned is since medical marijuana became legally distributed in the last year, that a good portion of that business, medical marijuana, in Pennsylvania has been cash transactions because still not legal nationwide. That's led to some safety concerns for customers who are carrying cash as they go into a facility. Wouldn't the risk be even greater if we had legally distributing centers, if you would, for recreational marijuana?
We're getting close to around half the population of the United States once New York and New Jersey finalize their legalization, where it's going to be legal at the state level anyway. So states are managing this, but there's no question having the federal government change it from a Schedule I narcotic, where they're still rating it as the equivalent of heroin, needs to be changed. It's just insane that the federal government is still considering marijuana at the same level of heroin.
Realistically, would a proposal in Pennsylvania to legalize marijuana really get anywhere in the Republican-controlled legislature, or what about just decriminalization?
That's a good question. I can't answer that. It is admittedly hard to see in the next couple months this changing in the General Assembly, but I do know attitudes among the public are shifting. You know, about 60% of Pennsylvania voters now support this. And it's getting close to, you know, even a majority of Republicans as well. I don't think this is a partisan issue. I think the voters are ahead of the politicians on this. It may take some additional time, but I think this is eventually going to happen. But we do, and this is where I want to make clear, I do think it is important that we do this the right way and we have the appropriate regulations in place. We have the coordination with law enforcement because, you know, driving under the influence, whether it's alcohol or marijuana, is unacceptable. We've got to make sure that we've get that message out as well.
Eugene DePasquale is Pennsylvania's Auditor General. Thanks so much for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me. And again, sorry I couldn't make it in the studio. Hopefully some other time.
All right. I'm Kevin Gavin, and you're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. Women's health providers are sounding the alarm after the Trump administration unveiled the final draft of a rule to cut federal funding for health care providers who perform abortions or refer patients to clinics that do. The funding comes through the Title X program, which provides reproductive health care services from breast cancer screenings to STI and HIV tests to contraceptives and birth control. WESA's Lucy Perkins has been following what Trump's proposed policy might do to Planned Parenthood, which provides about 40% of the Title X services nationwide. Lucy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Lucy, it's already illegal to use Title X funding toward abortions. That money is spent on other services that I mentioned before, health screenings, yeah. Birth control, et cetera. So what might effect this have?
Well, so, you know, clinics like Planned Parenthood or other clinics that use Title X funding to provide the services that you mentioned, they will now have to find other forms of funding to provide STI checks, HIV tests, pregnancy exams, cervical, breast cancer exams. And that will, you know, limit access for, you know, women, people of color, people in rural communities. A lot of people in Pennsylvania, you know, go to clinics like Planned Parenthood because they just live far away from other healthcare providers. So they depend on those clinics for pregnancy exams, for example. Right. And so it will just limit access to them if they don't have the funding to take Title X patients.
And those who benefit, those who need these services most, are whom?
Yeah, they're often women because we're talking about reproductive health care. They are people of color. They are people in rural parts of the state. And, you know, this can be extended across the country, too.
All right. Some in the anti-abortion camp argue that this is a good thing, that it won't affect the quality of care given to Pennsylvania patients. What have you learned from your reporting? What has it shown?
Well, I did talk to people on the anti-abortion side of this argument, and they say just that. You know, I talked to people at the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. I talked to the Pennsylvania Family Institute, and both those organizations say, you know, it is good to take, even though these clinics may not be using federal money for abortion services or abortion related services, you know, Planned Parenthood still performs abortions. And so pulling federal funding for other lines of funding that these clinics depend on is a good thing. Yeah.
Okay. You also have talked to the Planned Parenthood, the local Planned Parenthood CEO, Kim Everett. What did she say to counter that argument from anti-abortion activists?
Well, you know, she said it's already law in Pennsylvania that you have to have separate financial streams and report that these finances are separate. So she says that Planned Parenthood in Pennsylvania, you know, gets audited every year and must show that these financial streams are separate. Anti-abortion organizations, you know, say that this rule will affect all of the abortion providers who aren't keeping those financial streams separate. That's something that Kim Everett at Planned Parenthood just says is a invalid argument.
And so in our last 30 seconds, what's next?
Well, you know, this rule needs to be, so the final draft was released by the Trump administration, the Department of Health and Human Services. Once that is accepted into the Federal Register, it will go into effect 60 days after that.
Is there any legal recourse?
Yeah, Planned Parenthood and other organizations do plan on legally challenging and legislatively challenging this.
Very good. Lucy Perkins is a government and accountability reporter for WESA. Lucy, thanks so much for making the time.
You're welcome.
And for today, that's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, he's a community activist, a former Pittsburgh school board member, and now a candidate for Pittsburgh City Council District 9. A conversation with Randall Taylor, who claims elected officials are not doing enough to rein in developers. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Meg Fair, Mick Stanelli, Julia Zenkovich, and Alex Lenigan. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.